Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Linda Godfrey next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. We'll take your calls with Linda Godfrey. Linda, have you come across any unknown flying creatures?
You know, it's really funny you should ask that, because on the break, I've been corresponding with someone from near Alamogordo in southeastern New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Which reminds me of a smaller version of what I call the La Crosse, Wisconsin man bat. And he wrote me that since the summer of 2007, his sister and him have three times seen something baffling. They call it the night thing because they don't know what else to call it. They see it on U.S. Highway 5470 after 9 p.m. And the thing that it most reminds them of is a flying squirrel, except with a body over 3 feet, going on 4 feet in length. And the wings, he says, look like those of a flying squirrel, but they're quite ragged and even torn. The head resembles that of a small dog. So it's kind of like a small flying man wolf. And it drifts silently. It not only flaps, it can drift or float along the highway. And my suggestion was perhaps it's a chupacabra, because I've had
sure.
other people suggest that to me. They are winged in the traditional description. And he's saying, no, it's not. He doesn't think that it's a chupacabra, but he doesn't know what it is.
Who knows?
Who knows? This is one that's going to go on the Twitter when I get back.
Well, Twitter, that'll be very helpful to you, I think, to get
yes.
comments, feedback instantly, and everything else.
Right, I think so. Plus, it gives people a good sense of what's coming into me, which otherwise I get these reports, and I stick them in my file folders, and until I can get the next book out, or occasionally I'll put one on my blogs. I have a MySpace blog and a WordPress blog, and I maintain one at bisabreroad.com too. But otherwise, I've got these file folders full of incidents that nobody ever sees.
All right, let's go to the phones. And then next hour, we'll take actual stories. Portland, Oregon, Crystal, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Crystal.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good,
doing?
We're well, thanks.
Good. When I first heard Linda start talking, I immediately thought of the Egyptian deity Anubis.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever thought maybe that this werewolf creature has something to do with that deity?
Well, I don't know whether it actually has something to do with it, but I have had a number of witnesses describe it in precisely that way. In Hunting the American Werewolf, there was a sighting at the Great Lakes Naval Base, which is just north of Chicago on Lake Michigan. And these were by military people. And the officer who reported it described it as Anubis was the very first thing that she thought of. I guess there's a children's cartoon series that I don't know if it's on anymore, but one of the characters was called Anubis and looked exactly like the little deity statues that they used to have, which was actually the head of a jackal on a man's body.
Oh.
So it's a very apt comparison.
Yeah, I know that, the Egyptians did a lot of interdimensional stuff. And, when you're talking about them possibly being interdimensional. And, yes, when you were describing it, I didn't think werewolf. I thought, something different. So that was kind of cool, the way that you described everything.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, the Egyptians had some of the earliest art depicting animal and man combinations, what we would now call a chimera, a combination. And that was really a major facet of their worship.
I have a difficult time comprehending these dimensional creatures, whether we're talking about extraterrestrials mm-hmm. or Bigfoot creatures. I'm the kind of person, Linda, I want to see, other than, angelic things.
Right.
I want to be able to, believe that these creatures are coming from another planet, or these creatures are on this planet. We just haven't found them. I want them to be physical, not just dimensional. And even though I know you said they sometimes cross over the paths of being physical and dimensional, I have a difficult time comprehending that.
Well, I'm not sure that that's the case. That tends to be the paradigm that fits most of the facts of the report. I have to admit, that or the the naturally adapted species, one or the other. But, yeah, the dimensional thing is a hard thing to put your head around. But, and I'm no scientist or physicist by any means. However, if you read a lot of the new popular books, I'm thinking by Brian Greene and some of these other physicists who talk a little bit about the new quantum mechanics theory, string theory, all that, they posit that there have to be a minimum of 11 other dimensions that exist parallel to ours. They may not all be similar enough to ours that things could go back and forth, but the other dimensions have to be there in order for modern physics to work. So I guess I look at it as simply, how do we know that some of them aren't in places where we can cross over now and then, that there aren't intersecting points that something can't pop in and out? It would certainly explain things a lot easier. You know, otherwise you have to go to ideas like, I know that some people believe it's mass hallucination, which I find even harder to buy, you know, that millions of people, not millions, but at least hundreds in this instance are seeing the same furry creature. And oftentimes there's more than one person seeing the same creature at once, at the same time. You know, how are their brains connecting to experience the same thing? To me, that's more woo-woo, you know, than going with the alternate dimensions.
Okay, let's go to Travis in Appleton, Wisconsin, your neck of the woods. Go ahead, Travis.
Yeah, good morning there, George and Linda.
Hi, Travis.
Hi. See, as a Native American, I'm automatically curious on the werewolf. As far as, what is your estimates as far as how many are in, say, the state of Wisconsin?
Wow, I have absolutely no idea, because it's really hard to say whether, if these are large carnivores, they're probably similar to other ones such as cougars or bears that can roam 30 miles in a day foraging, and we just really have no good handle. You know, the DNR constantly revises its estimates of how many bears and wolves we have in the state.
Mm-hmm.
By hundreds. I mean, they just admitted they were off on how many bears we have by, I think, 500 or so at least. So I don't even know how you'd even begin to guess something like that. I don't know if it's just a very small pack of creatures with a really wide range, or something that has a fairly good breeding population but needs to remain hidden.
I guess I would bring up a second question real quick, as far as, in all your reports, have there been any kind of report that could tell the difference between a male or a female werewolf?
That's a great question. You know, it doesn't come up very often, but I have had a couple of people note this, and only one has told me that they saw what would definitely be considered male genitalia on the creature. It was one that was standing within fairly close range, and they had a really good look at it. They were experienced outdoorsmen, and they looked to see which sex it was, because they were used to, you know, determining whether they were going to hunt and shoot various species by whether it was a male or a female. And indeed, they did notice that this one was a male. Other times, I've had a couple of other people, such as the man in Georgia, in the swamp, who actually was a funeral director and has some anatomical knowledge. And he looked and said the thing was just too covered in fur that he couldn't tell.
Is there a family of these out there, do you think?
Well, one of the people who passed the polygraph test on the Monster Quest show actually saw three of them together at kneeling by a stream, and thought that one of them looked a little larger. Also, the students in Michigan who saw the creature, they were also featured, but to a lesser degree, on the Monster Quest show, saw two individuals at the same site. One was taller and gray, and the other one was a little shorter and brown.
All right, next up, let's go to Granite Falls, Washington. Paul, you're up with us west of the Rockies.
Hi, Art and Linda.
Hi.
Thank you for having me on. And Art, I'm sorry.
That's right. That's
I was thinking about how long I have listened to you, Art, and I've listened ever since the early 80s.
Well, thank
this
you.
Is the first time I've ever called.
Thank you, Paul.
But I work in an industry where I travel a lot in remote areas. And some of the people that I work with have seen and heard Bigfoot. And you can go to the BFRO website and see some of their reportings. You just want to look for, go to recent sightings and click on both A and B and look for the city of Chelan. And there's some interesting stories there of some of the people that I've worked with. But one guy that I worked with in particular saw a Bigfoot in Omak, Washington, and followed it for a ways, and anyhow had a camera and took some pictures of the feet or the footprints. And he was a graduate of Washington State University and knew the professor of anthropology there. And he went and told his story to this professor. And before he showed the professor the photographs, the professor described the footprint to a T and also described the deformed foot on the right foot that had a the little toe that was deformed, and Gary's mouth just hit the floor and said, "How did you know that?" And he says, "We've known about this, or we've been following this animal for a few years now."
Hmm.
Now, you know, just north of me in Darrington, they have a research lab for Bigfoot up on the Saddle River. And I find it really strange that they've been up there all these years. And you don't hear a lot about it, but they're up there. And they won't repair the bridge that used to go across there because of their research and that. But up where I live, there's a lot of sightings, an awful lot of sightings. And it doesn't take me very long to get into real remote areas. And I've ran across really odd things up hunting and fishing and just, you know, playing around in the woods. I've seen deer literally ripped in half. And animal, you know, bears and cougars and coyotes and things like that, they don't normally do that to an animal that they're going to kill and eat. Usually the rib cage is intact, but I've seen a couple of deer where the rib cage was actually just ripped in half. Yeah. And you look at that and you wonder, how could an animal do that?
That's pretty aggressive, yeah.
I mean, that's pretty bizarre. And but back to that that friend of mine that went to Washington State University and talked to the professor of anthropology, I find it really interesting that they know about these things, and they're not, and they don't really tell us much about it.
I wonder why.
Well, I don't know. I knew a guy down in Puyallup that lived along the Cedar River, and he was out on his deck with a bunch of his friends. Next thing you know, the dogs started going crazy, and they looked up. And here's this animal with its nipple line above a six-foot fence, and everybody just scattered.
Gosh, yeah, there are so many creatures. Paul, thanks for the call.
Yeah, and thank you so much.
These combinations of species, Linda, fascinate me. How does it happen?
Well, they're...
I mean, biologically, how does it happen?
Lots of people have asked me whether I believe that the man-wolf or the werewolf or whatever you want to call it is some sort of canine-human hybrid. And I've even had people suggest to me that perhaps our military has been breeding these for warriors or something, although I don't think that, A, we're at that technological level yet.
You never know.
Well, that's true. Because, you know, I've learned, I had to do a lot of research for a book that's coming out in a month or so from Chelsea House called Mythical Creatures. And I have a chapter on chimeras, which are technically a creature that in one body carries within it
the gene,
at least
right?
two kinds of DNA.
Yes.
At least two kinds of DNA. And most people right away think of flashback to, remember there was a mouse that had what looked like a human ear growing.
Yeah, well,
on
that's
it.
A true story, isn't it?
It is a true story, yeah. Except it was not a true chimera because it wasn't a human ear. It was a piece of cow cartilage that was sort of
and shaped into an ear?
Coddled into that shape.
And okay, but if somebody puts in, let's say, a pig valve into you for your heart?
You're not a chimera.
You're not.
Because the pieces are still separate. Your DNA is not including another DNA.
Yeah, but
DNA.
You don't think whatever cells are in that pig don't end up...
Well, there could be a few migrating, but it's not quite the same thing as when it's throughout the body. For instance, that mouse, the cow cartilage kept its cow DNA, and the mouse kept its mouse DNA. It's just that the mouse was supplying it with blood. And
it was just a host, yeah.
It was hosting it, exactly. However, we've had some real true chimeras, and some of them involving human DNA, that have happened. In Shanghai, 2003, the Chinese created human-animal chimeras by combining human cells with rabbit eggs. They were intending to make stem cells.
What was the outcome?
Well, they were supposed to produce stem cells for medical purposes, and they said they did not allow them to mature into full bloom. Well, I don't know what you'd call them, either rumens or habits, but who knows? You know, I tend to believe that where people have the power to do something, eventually they'll do it. You know, not everybody has the same ethics that we would think of. And in March 2007, a professor at the University of Nevada grew a human sheep chimera that had enough human organs inside its sheep body that you could declare the animal to be 15% human. And I think that's astounding.
Huge. That is astounding.
Yeah, and that's only 2 years ago. His name was Esmao Zanjani. And he did this in intending to grow donor-compatible organs for transplants, and I think is probably still trying it. And then there was the bunny that was supposed to have had jellyfish genes implanted into it. He was a professor at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. And that may have actually been a hoax. It was exclaimed or proclaimed to be a science and art experiment, but was never actually shown. And my son was attending that school at the time and said that he saw a lecture by this man who said that it was really just kind of a art experimental piece. So it may never have happened. But still, here's something else that I think you'll find. This is really astounding to me. In June 2008, there was a group of Catholic bishops who got together in England and Wales and declared to the British Parliament that human-animal chimera embryos should not be destroyed before birth, but should have the right to live and be treated like other humans.
I like that.
Now, I think that's pretty cool also, but it astounds me that there's a group of bishops on the planet who feel it necessary to make that statement.
Well, that's true. Linda, how about a couple of websites? What do you have out there?
Well, I've got the new Twitter feed, which just look for Linda Godfrey, all one word. I've got beastofbrayroad.com, that's spelled B-R-A-Y road. I've got a MySpace blog, just again, look for Linda Godfrey, Run Together. Weirdmichigan.com. And I'm going to be appearing at Paranormal LA August 21st to 22nd. You can go to ghosttheory.com.
Okay, we'll be back with some more phone calls for you, Linda, before next hour, Creature Stories then. Indeed it is. And Linda Godfrey, our special guest. Hey, have you signed up for Streamlink yet? For just pennies a day, go to coasttocoastam.com. You get special downloads and you can pick up archives now back one full year. Streamlink, part of Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We'll take some more questions next hour. We'll take some of your true stories. Let's go to Bush, Louisiana, first-time caller. Hi, Gail, you're up with us.
Hi, how y'all doing?
We're doing great, thanks.
This is a story about one of my youngest daughter's boyfriend. He was, he heard some stuff up in the woods in back of his house, and he went back there to, you know, investigate, and he said it sounded like it was something large. And what he described was the same thing that she's talking about.
Really?
He said the thing stood about 8 feet tall, and a car passed by, and when the car passed by, it shined on its eyes, and at that time, it lunged at him, and he had a machete and a sword in his hand, and it stabbed it. And he said the thing stood up on its hind legs, grabbed the machete out, and threw it down. He said it made like a cry. It said it sounded like a cougar.
Huh.
And then he turned around and ran off back into the woods.
Did now, you see blood or anything like that?
I got his shirt. It's got the blood on it, and it's got hair on it.
Do you have that shirt?
Yes, I have that shirt. Now, this happened a couple years back, and I've been trying to get in touch with y'all forever. And my husband keeps telling me to give up, but I finally got in touch with y'all.
You got through.
Have you kept the shirt in a plastic bag or someplace where it remained unhandled by humans so the DNA wouldn't get contaminated?
It's in a plastic bag, you know, a regular plastic store bag, but I didn't put it in the freezer or anything.
Well, that might not be necessary as long as it's been kept pristine, because, you know, if you've got fur and you've got blood, then it could be analyzed with DNA, or at least the morphological process could be done on the hair at the very least, and maybe we can see what this is.
Yeah, well, because that was funny when you mentioned the military, because he had said, like, a few days before that, because this was right after Katrina, he said the military was in the woods, and he said they were they had all them, the big, what they call them, things to go through the mud and everything with the guns and all that. And he said he thought it was odd, but he didn't think nothing of it. But then when this thing attacked, he said he was wondering if that's what they were after.
Makes you wonder if something
cave.
Pardon?
He said there is a cave around in the, I guess it's around where he lives, because he lives up in Mandeville. And he said that he found this cave. He said it was covered with, like, vines, and he could look in. He said it was, like, about 20 feet, and it had, like, bones from deer and, you know, other small animals. But he said he had seen that, like, a month before that, because he goes in the woods all the time.
I was going to say, it makes you wonder if the Hurricane Katrina flushed it out, you know, if maybe it was something that managed to stay hidden and then no longer could do that. I have also noticed a correlation lately, as I'm always trying to compile data and compare, and I have found some correlation to military installations. It seems that it turns up more frequently than you would expect.
Why do you think that might be? Something going on the base?
Well, there's a possibility that there's something going on in the base. There's also a possibility that military installations are built at strategic positions, usually near confluences of water or in high spots where any creature might also, you know, find it good to hunt. And also lots of military installations for those very same reasons were once sacred Native American spots. They tend to pick the same exact spots for all these reasons. So it's hard to say whether it's the creature wanting the convenience of the good spot or that there are ancient earth energies coming from the place or just that the military activity is creating something. I don't know what.
All right, let's go to Baton Rouge. Let's go to Dorian on the wild card line. Hi, Dorian.
Hi, George. Hi. And Linda, you are so right about this creature. I say it was around like 1989 or 1990. I was in my middle teens at the time. And me and like three cousins and a friend, we were walking the levee. You know, it's parallel to the Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm.
It was about 9 p.m. at night. And so we were walking. We were going to like a fair downtown. And the road is like pretty dark at that hour. So it's like a long stretch of road that goes through Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
So we were walking, and my cousin, he was like, y'all see that? And, like, two of them, him and his friend, they saw it. And I was like, what you see? We didn't see anything. We walked down a couple of steps to try to see what we were looking at. And, you know, cows and bulls are pretty common. If you look on the levee, we used to seeing those. But we didn't really see any other cattle. So we came down, and the thing, when he described it, he said it was looking, he said, you don't see, it was looking like it was tall, it was on two legs, it was inside like a dumpster, like I guess eating trash or something.
Mm-hmm.
So as we walked down and it saw us, and he was telling me at first, he said, it seen us and it looked and it was on two legs, and then when it seen that we didn't run, it charged at us. So we all ran, we just seen them running, so we ran also. So we went down the levee, we came, and he was like, you didn't see that? And, like, a couple of us just still didn't see it. So So we walked back. Like, maybe it was crazy to do, but we walked back up. So we looked again, and it still had its fins, and the eyes were glowing. And you
what
could
color?
See it.
What color were they?
That, like, it was like a yellowish type color.
Mm-hmm.
It was glowing, and the color of it was like a whitish, like grayish type color, and it was shaggy. Like, it had a long face, like a snout, like. And it charged again. At that point, we knew then it wasn't nothing that we ever seen before, so we ran, and we just didn't stop running. But it's true. When we were talking about this actually a couple of weeks ago and was wondering if anyone else had that kind of experience. And
oh, yeah.
Now I'm here, and I know he's listening because he listens to Coast to Coast also. So if people don't believe it, it's real, and just keep your eyes open because beings like this does exist.
They do, according to eyewitnesses. And by the way, anybody who wants to report to me can go to beastofbrayroad.com and just send an email from any one of the places. You can just push the little button
okay.
that says, make report, and please do send me an email so I can get something in writing from you.
I also sent Georgia a fast blast. I don't know if you got it yet because I was so anxious to try to tell my story about this situation. But I would definitely get in touch with you.
Thank you. That's great.
Okay. Thank you.
Lots of great stories. You can write another book here, Linda.
Well, I'm actually working on the Beast 3 book at the moment. I'm going to call it something like Encounters with Man, True Encounters with Man Beast or something like that. I'm not sure. But I do. I've got so many more that I just have to get it out there.
Let's go to Built-in Virginia. Ruth, you're up with us. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, George. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
I had an encounter in 86 in the fall. Actually, I think it was in October of 86. And I had two big dogs at the time, two Akitas, and they were very antsy, so I let them out. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning. I was up watching TV,
mm-hmm.
and they immediately ran to the left. Now, we lived in a really rural area back then. We had thick woods to the left, and there were only about 4 houses on our road, and the rest of them were farmland and woods. So anyway, it was pretty deserted. But they ran to the fence line immediately and started barking, and I mean, not barking, growling. I mean, they were like frantic to get at whatever was on the other side. And since I remember thinking it was probably a person, a man or, you know, teenagers or something, so I ran and grabbed the dogs and pulled back on their collars, and they were just rearing up and trying to get at it. And I yelled, "Get out of here," you know, to the guy. I thought it was a person.
Mm-hmm.
And it let out this horrendous growl. It's the only thing I can describe. It's this growl. It sounded like somebody who had a tracheotomy almost. It was like half, like you could almost hear a voice, but it was this hideous, really loud growl. And at the time, I'm getting scared just talking about it. My hair stood up. I mean, I could feel the back of my neck and everything. And I just grabbed the dogs and hauled them into the house, and they were still going frantic. And shut the door. And my husband was asleep upstairs, and I went and loaded the shotgun just to be safe. And I thought, well, what should I do? And then I sort of opened the door. And I had a flashlight and I had the shotgun near me, and I shined the light over at the fence line. And whatever this person thing was at least, I'd say, 6'6" or 7 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And
average.
It appeared to have ears. That's the weird thing about it. He was either wearing a hat with ears or something, but I didn't see the face profile because it was staring at me,
mm-hmm.
and looking at me while I was shining a light on him. But it was this huge, massive shape, like a person, but hairy.
Well, if it had visible ears, it probably wasn't the Bigfoot. Did you notice, was there any color to the eye shine? Did the eyes shine back when you flashed
it
with the light?
Well, it was reddish to me, not yellowish. I mean, like a canid.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, orangish sort of.
Orangish, yeah. I've heard that. And it kind of depends sometimes on if it's really dark out. Sometimes the eye shine will look darker to people. So it kind of ranges between orangish and yellowish most of the time. But, yeah, that's pretty.
Well, it just kept pacing up and down the fence line. It really scared me. And you know, and now it's more developed, and I haven't heard anything like that, but I've still, it makes me kind of nervous going out at night.
Well, you know what's so amazing about this, Ruth and Linda? These creatures are sighted by a lot of people.
Yes.
You know, who aren't making up stories. They're seeing something out there that is very unusual that they haven't seen before.
Right. And the fact that your dogs noticed it would tend to argue against the mass hallucination theory, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that that's all a very important. What part of Virginia did you say this was, Ruth?
I don't know where she is now.
She's gone now.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a great story. And again, that sound of the growling like someone had a tracheotomy, again, describes the sound that people have made to me.
Let's go to Vancouver, Canada. Michael on the international line. Hey, Michael.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Okay, good.
And Linda.
Hi.
Oh, hi. How you doing? I've seen the creature also. Before I get into telling my story about the creature, George, this is Pontifex. I work with the ley lines and grid lines. I've spoken to you many times before.
Yep.
I've documented the things that have come through this portal or whatever when I do my work. Now, getting to the story, I was up north, northern BC. My dog is sitting in the front seat around Smithers. We're driving down a road, no lights or anything. I've got my headlights on, full beam, and this creature runs across the road. It's exactly what everybody's describing. My dog freaked out on it. It had the long snout. It was sort of a silvery black, longer legs, shorter legs, and it bounded across the road. Now, I'm driving a van, so this thing was at that height. I could estimate maybe 5 to 6 feet as it was sort of crunched over,
mm-hmm.
bounding
yeah.
across the road. That's basically what I saw. I kept on driving. But working with the portals and the grid lines, the things that come through, and I generally work with angels, the great-grandmothers, great-grandfathers, and so forth on and on, the elementals, things are coming through my portal. My take on this thing is I think these things are being brought through the portals.
Are being brought by someone or something?
Well, it's kind of freaking me out when you say military, but that's my general feeling on it. I don't know how to explain that, but it's just my feeling.
Island of Dr. Moreau.
Well, yes. Well, George, I've sent you my link to my MySpace. It's PONTFX. I've documented my pictures there. If people like to go and see what's coming through, it's all good, but it's there. It's proof that I've got pictures of this stuff, okay?
Well, and you're up in that neck of the woods, Michael. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Wisconsin we go, east of the Rockies. Ryan, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi, George and Linda. How are you?
Good.
Hey there, Ryan.
Hi. Linda, I've talked to you a couple of times. This is Ryan. I had a show in central Wisconsin and a radio show.
Definitely.
Yep, and we talk. And
You've got that voice, Ryan.
Yeah.
Well, and George, as you know, a new owner comes in radio, and they do what they do. They wipe, they wipe the slate clean.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yeah.
So I went from a radio station to a police station. I'm a police officer now.
How about that?
Oh, great.
Okay. And Linda, just on Monday night, Tuesday morning, I had a call for service. And I went to this wonderful lady's house, just a sweet lady, had no reason to call in a prank or anything like that. And, I walked into her house and she sat me down in the living room and she said, "Well, you're going to think I'm crazy." And I said, "Oh, no, believe me. I've heard plenty of stories." And, she said, "Well, I saw somebody in my dining room," and she said, "I think it was a dwarf."
Whoa.
She lifted her hand about 2.5 to 3 feet off the ground, and she said it was about so high and had a red cloak or coat and was holding a staff. And just kind of, she said, he looked at her kind of inquisitively, like, "What are you doing here?"
Mm-hmm.
And she said she kind of looked at it and looked away and went to get up, and it just kind of turned around and walked away, and it was gone.
Wow. What town was this? Do you mind telling?
I'm in it's Cornell.
In Cornell.
Mm-hmm. Lake Holcomb, Cornell.
Okay.
Area near in Chippewa County.
Oh, okay.
Have you had any other dwarf or gnome sightings in this area?
Occasionally I get those, and I do also get Native American little people stories.
Okay.
So it's not unheard of, but you know what's bizarre is just recently, I've also had another dining room sighting from a lady who saw a tall orange creature with a large white head in her dining room.
In her dining room.
Yeah, so I don't know what it is about Wisconsin dining rooms all of a sudden. This is really, really strange. But so, Ryan, how did you resolve this with her?
Oh, well, I took her information and just said, well, we will look around. And she felt safe that there was no one actually in her house. She had family members come. And I'm not necessarily sure that if I would have been there, I would have seen it. But I know for a fact that she knows she saw something.
And where did it go? Excuse me, did it leave or something? Or?
It left. She said as soon as they locked eyes on each other, it walked out. And just walked through the kitchen, walked into another room, and it was gone. And she said she went to follow it, and it was just gone.
Wow. Well, you'll have to email me about that one.
I certainly will.
You're going to be flooded with emails, Linda.
That's great. I love it.
Truly is. Have you ever been frightened yourself on any of the places you've been and the work you've done?
I actually have. I was in a basement in Michigan where there was supposed to be a ghost, and I saw... Well, I won't say it was a ghost, but it was an anomalous electromagnetic ball of energy in this dark basement that I don't know what it possibly could have been coming from. All I knew was that I didn't like it. And I also saw something vertical, 7 feet tall, with gray fur, just the outline of its back, cross the road on a very lonely gravel road in Michigan. And I was there only with a photographer and a couple of witnesses. And none of us had a gun, and nothing in between us. And that was a little scary, and it shook its fur out. You ever heard of, you know what it sounds like when a dog shakes its wet fur out?
Yeah, yeah.
It's unmistakable.
It's got that snappy sound to
yep.
it.
Yep, and it did this less than 30 feet away from me in the bushes and on this lonely gravel road. And that made me a little nervous. But when it flashed across the road, and we know that it was at least 7 feet tall because it blotted out a reflective road sign, the witnesses just absolutely freaked out and insisted on leaving at that point.
I had a Marine call me a few weeks ago, Linda, who was going out looking for Bigfoot, but he was a sniper, and he was going to shoot it. And I think I talked him out of it.
Thank you.
You know, because I don't think a Bigfoot would have attacked him. And I mean, he was going out there with the sole intent of trying to shoot it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, any good hunter will always refrain from shooting something that they don't know exactly what it is. Know that it's in season, know that they should be shooting it. You know, how do you know you're not shooting a human in a fursuit?
Exactly. We'll be back with Linda Godfrey, and now we'll take your phone calls with direct stories of what you may have seen. That's next on Coast to Coast AM.